Blog Talk Radio.
In the eyes of a ranger, the unsuspecting stranger had better know the truth of wrong from right.
Of the eyes of a ranger are upon.
Welcome to a live edition of Wayland Sports Talk. I'm your host, Ryan Tarvin, joined by my co-host, Chris Rickett. How you doing, sir?
Doing great, Tarvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. It's been a long week, but a good week. Okay, sorry about that.
Got some technical difficulties.
Oh, man, not really. Because I don't know how to press a button. That's not technical. That's my difficulties, not technical difficulties. But so, man, it's been a long week. A lot of sports going on, man. We got the NBA playoffs on right now. We're going to discuss that right off the top. We're going to discuss the Dream Team, the Isaiah Thomas controversy with Michael Jordan. We're going to talk about the College World Series. We have actually three guests coming on tonight, Chris. We have Dusty, he's coming on to discuss Texas. We have two guys coming on to discuss Oregon and Southern Cal. We're going to have a little debate going on about Oregon and Southern Cal. Who's better? Who's going to win? Should be some fun stuff. So hope everyone had a great week and ready to rock and roll. I'm going to go ahead and give the call-in number before we even get started, Chris. 646-716-5564. 646-716-5564. You go ahead and discuss the chat room.
Yeah, I wanted to remind everybody we got the chat room open for business. So if you have any topics you want to weigh in on or want to follow all along with the show, you know, just welcome your comments in the chat room. So just ready to go, man.
Yeah, we'll start off right now, man. And what's current and what's going on is Miami and OKC, game three tonight. And I'm having a little background noise from Trey or Chris. I don't know. Will y'all check y'all's phones to see?
Hey, what's happening, brother?
Not much, man. Hey, I'm hearing some background noise. Is everything good?
Yeah, I think so. On my end.
Okay. All right, good. We're going to start off talking about the NBA playoffs. Man, we're in game three tonight. Miami stole game two in OKC thanks to some questionable officiating. So I watched that game, Chris, and I'm sitting there watching the end of the game. OKC, they have a habit of getting down. I don't know why these guys, I think they were down 18-2 at one time, and then all of a sudden they make a run to get back in it. But again, you know, at the end of the game, here's a referee determining a game. I don't know how you can miss a call right in front of you. Durant went to the goal for a shot, went up for a shot, and I think it was LeBron hacked him, and no whistle. Really changed the game. I really would like to have seen overtime. Chris, what'd you think about it?
Yeah, it definitely looked like Miami got the got actually a big call on the road. You know, you expect in OKC that they would get that call, but a lot of times with these star players, you know, they tend to get the calls that go their way. And you would have thought that with it being the game being in OKC, that Durant would have got that foul called. But, you know, I didn't have a huge problem with it. I mean, I know it was – when you see the replay, it looks – you know, a lot worse probably than it did live. So I'm actually kind of in favor of letting them play it out, you know, and not have the refs, you know, determine the game, you know, on the foul call. But, you know, you get in a situation where you think a foul should have been called, and in that instance it was probably deserved to be called, and it just didn't go Oklahoma City Thunder's way. But let's face it, that call is not going to determine this series. So it's definitely going to be the series is going to go right down to the wire. But you know, game three is tonight, and it's in Miami, and right now they're all tied up. So maybe the Oklahoma City Thunder can steal one on the road here.
Trey, what do you think about that no call?
I'm gonna have to disagree with Chris pretty I guess extremely, because I thought, you know, here's the deal. I mean, if we have a chance for free basketball, one, in a championship, it's only good for the game. But two, you can't allow something. I mean, and I thought it was pretty obvious. I mean, it was nothing on the hands, but, I mean, he kept him from jumping to his full height by, you know, hacking him all over his legs and his body. And I just don't like having something like that in the back of everyone's mind at the end of the game where everyone's going, ah, there's a foul. You know, I'd rather them call it. I mean, Durant still got to hit the free throws. It's not as if just because he called it that the game's thereby, you know, changed forever. You know, you call the legitimate foul, he hits his shots, and, well, yeah, we got overtime, and the best team will win it in the next five minutes. But, you know, for me, I just don't like to see, you know, refs, you know, stay out of it, you know, at the wrong times. And at times during that game, they were calling a lot of ticky-tack stuff. And so you got to officiate the same way the entire game. Even if it's the last shot to tie the game, I'd like to see the exact same officiating that I saw in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And that was being called in the first quarter. So, you know, to me, it was not a consistent officiated game. And the Thunder, unfortunately, you know, maybe they lose the game anyway, so who knows. But I would like to have seen it, you know, play out a different way.
Trey, that's a great point about the consistency. And these players get – you saw Durant had five fouls on him going into the fourth. So they were calling ticky-tack fouls, and then all of a sudden, you know, a chance to tie the game. You know, you miss a call like that right in front of you. I think a foul's a foul no matter what time of game it is. That's just my mentality. Is a lot of officials will get up there and look at the scoreboard. Your job is to officiate a game, to see what's going on in between the lines, and they call it. You shouldn't be looking up at the clock. You shouldn't be, you know, worried about what the score is. You need to call the game. And it seems like a million people saw a foul, and this guy standing right in front of it wasn't, but he didn't see it. But why in the world is there no accountability for these guys? That's my question. If I missed something like that at work, I'd probably be fired, and all of you would. So why do these guys get to have a profession where they can make mistakes that obvious and not have any consequences, Chris?
Well, I think, you know, they do have some sense of accountability. I mean, you know, if they're missing, you know, 30% of their calls, I mean, all these referees in any major sport, they always go back and review the calls that they missed, and they use those as opportunities for training, for lack of a better term. But, you know, I don't know what the exact review process is for the NBA, but I suspect that they have some guidelines in place that if an official is constantly, you know, out of position or making, you know, bad calls, that they're somehow reprimanded a little bit. You know, maybe they don't get the call in the NBA Finals, you know. Maybe they're not viewed as being one of the top referees in the league, and so they don't get that honor. But I don't know. I mean, to me, you're going to miss calls, and you're going to get some calls that go your way, and you're going to get calls that, you know, that are in your favor. So, you know, it's up to the teams at that point to try to fight through that and not make excuses, which, you know, hey, I give all the credit in the world to Durant, you know, because they asked him about it in a post-game interview, and he just basically said, hey, I missed the shot. He didn't blame it. He didn't blame it on the referee. He didn't blame it on the play. He owned up to it, and he just said, I missed the shot. And I think that's the right attitude you got to have.
It's probably because he wanted to keep his money in his pocket. That's the only reason he did. But, you know, it is an excuse. I mean, sometimes I look at it like something like that that's so obvious. And I know I'm a basketball official. I miss calls all the time. Either I'm out of position or I saw it wrong. And it does happen. But three officials on a court, somebody's got to blow the whistle. You know, even if your partner was in a bad position, somebody's got to hit that. This is not some recreational league, these guys. I mean, if you miss a call like that, I mean, I don't see rec center officials miss calls that obvious. and that's what bothers me a little bit. This is the NBA Finals, Trey. This is for all the marbles. And a play like that, and especially with all the controversy that's went on in officiating in the NBA with that guy that took a bribe and was fixing those games, Trey, what do you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, here's what bothers me, I guess, about that game. I know I just touched on this. It's really consistency. I saw those calls going for Dwayne Wade and LeBron, and, you know, Durant was getting, you know, calls against him if he was the defender. And all I want to see as a fan is consistency because, you know, neither one of these teams or my team is a fan. And ultimately, you know, I just want to see a competitive game. But I hate to see a game where I feel like the officials at the end change what they're doing. And that always makes me wonder, you're right, because there's been a lot of scandals with referees throughout the sports, you know, and it's such an easy sport to all, you know, I missed that call. So, I mean, yeah, you definitely want to see a completely consistent game in the NBA Finals, and it's just because of that perception of, you know, why did he miss that call? And, you know, if you follow us on Twitter, you know, one of the, I think Joe Crawford, I think the referee, he's like, he's 15-3 in the postseason with him officiating, which is, and he was officiating that game. So, you got the stats like that. I know it can be completely, you know, innocuous, and then the stat may mean nothing. But it's just somebody's keeping up with that. And then there's a, you know, I don't know, there's a reason, Tarvin. What do you think? I mean, does that bother you that, you know, there's an official who's, you know, the Heat are 15-3 in postseason with?
Oh, you better believe it does. And anytime there's money involved in something, there's corruption. And I don't care what it is. You can go, I've seen people betting on Little League games, man, throwing money around. I mean, this is the NBA. These players know what's going on. The officials know what's going on. And now the fans are starting to know what's going on. But, yeah, if I'm a coach and I'm looking at that stat, I'm questioning it. But you know what? Auburn is undefeated at night, all home games I've ever been to. So, you know, I need to go back to games like that. Right, Trey?
I think maybe you are the X factor. You're bribing somebody.
Exactly. You know, Chris, I'm paying off officials as I go.
That's right.
But Chris and Trey, I have a question. I'll start with Chris. That game to Russell Westbrook, do you think that he took too many shots, especially jump shots in that game, or do you think he played well?
Well, I thought, you know, I mean, if you look at his stat line, I mean, obviously he has, you know, he had a very productive night. You know, and listening to some of the post-game comments from Magic Johnson, he just basically threw him under the bus and said it was like one of the worst, you know, point guard performances in NBA Finals history. I don't know if I'd go that far. I think the problem that you had with Westbrook was how involved he got Durant, you know, early on. And I think I've heard an interesting stat line that they actually have a pretty decent record when Westbrook takes more shots than Durant. But I think the point is that you have a superstar player, and you know he is the number one scorer on your team. Get him involved early. You know he shouldn't have, you know, four shots at the end of the first quarter. I mean, you've got your job as a point guard is to get all the scorers involved first, and then. And then attack the basket and try to get, you know, your offensive production there. So I think that's where I have more of a heartburn, I guess, with the play of Russell Westbrook. Not so much the number of shots that he took, but how effective he was, you know, being the leader of that offense, you know, and not getting other guys integrated into the offense early on.
Trey, what about you?
You know, Tarvin, I was thinking about this actually during the game, and it almost comes up every time I watch the Thunder play is, you know, how good is Westbrook? Is he, I mean, is he an elite point guard? Is he a guy who's out of place on the court? And to me, I don't know that he is a typical point guard as maybe a guy who I would like to see run the team. I think that's part of the conflict that people like Magic Johnson have with him is, you know, he's a great ball handler, but he is prone to turning the ball over. He's prone to making really poor decisions when he drives the lane. And part of it is his abilities obviously not matching up with the offensive style of Thunder. I mean, they're not a slashing team that when he drives, you know, there's a guy right behind him, you know, that he can pass to for the alley-oop dunk or anything. I mean, he drives to the basket and other four guys are, you know, watching. For the most part, from the outside, that's part of the problem. It leads to, you know, if he misses, there's no rebound because there's nobody there. So there's a lot of weird, I think, reasons why people criticize Westbrook. For me, I do think that he still hasn't hit that point in his maturation where he understands, okay, it's not my place right now to take care of this game over. I don't need to take a bunch of crazy shots. Let me get a Durant. I think that is part of it, but I'm not ready to throw the guy under the bus a la Magic Johnson. I mean, I think he's a productive player. He's a really good player. He's on the borderline of superstardom, but you know, he's just he has to learn one other aspect, I think, of being a point guard, because I think he still sort of, you know, takes it as a two guard almost, where he, you know, he gets the ball and he's going to do what he wants to with it instead of worrying about what the other guys in the floor are doing.
Yeah, I'm with Chris on the – his job as a point guard is to get everyone else involved, and that's the first thing he does. He needs to do. Look at LeBron. He's not a point guard, but that's what he wants to do. He wants to get everybody around him involved in that game in a flow, and then he'll take over. I think, and also, he just takes too many jump shots, man. He shoots outside too much, and he's missing them. But when he goes to the hole, he's all day. He needs to focus on that. Go into the hole, and maybe even if he's covered opening, somebody's open in order to get a layup or a dunk or just an open three-pointer. I think that's the part of his game I'd like to see him get better on. I know he's a great player. I know he can score. But in order to be an elite player, Chris, you have to be able to get other people involved and have them take over a game. So this series is going to be interesting. Right now it's halftime. I believe Miami's up one, and we'll try to come back to this later if we have time. But staying in the NBA, Trey and Chris, we're going to talk about the Dream Team, the 92 Dream Team, actually, for basketball. We were going to talk about it the other night, but we ran out of time. I don't know if y'all heard about this or not, but I wanted to discuss Isaiah Thomas being left off the roster in 92. And when you look at this roster, I mean, honestly, Stockton was a great point guard. He was good. But Trey, is he better than Isaiah Thomas?
For that team, Tarvin, I think he was the guy. I don't have, you know, Isaiah Thomas was obviously, you know, a phenomenal player. I don't have a problem with Stockton being on my team. I mean, Stockton was the man at, you know, getting other guys the ball. And they had plenty of other guys on that team who needed the ball. You know, Thomas was more of, you know, he's going to take his shots and score. They needed a point guard. I think, you know, I think they could have added me as point guard and done really well. But I think they got Stockton because, you know, he's the guy. He gets everyone else involved. And, you know, if he scores too, fantastic, you know. So I think he was the guy they needed. And I have no knocks for Isaiah Thomas not being on my team. I mean, the only player I think when you look at that team and makes your head scratch is Christian Laettner. But, you know, he was a college guy. They wanted a college guy, and he was the guy. But everybody else on that team, I don't know how anybody could say didn't deserve to be on there.
Yeah, Chris, what do you think about Isaiah, the Dream Team?
Yeah, I mean, look, Isaiah was a great, great point guard in the NBA, but I mean, if you compare him to Stockton, I mean, the only thing that Isaiah has that Stockton doesn't is, of course, an NBA championship. But, you know, Stockton, you know, he's the all-time assist leader in the NBA, all-time steals leader, I believe, also in the NBA. So when you look, and if you look at the context of that team, I think Trey's spot on. I mean, they needed a true leader at the point guard position, and Stockton was exactly that. And then plus, you know, Karl Malone's on that team, and, you know, they basically played their whole career together. So I don't have a big beef, you know, that Stockton was on that team, you know, rather than Isaiah. But, and you know, a lot of it's probably sour grapes that Isaiah, you know, he felt he got left out, and deservedly so. And I don't know. I mean, it's good for debate, but I mean, I totally agree. I think they made the right choice with taking Stockton instead of Isaiah.
Well, I think Isaiah is a better player than John Stockton. And I know what y'all said about the fit, but it is. And I guess it didn't go to the most talented player. It went to the best fit for a dream team to be able to have. And I think Karl Malone had a lot to do with that. But the controversy with this decision, and I want you guys to tell me and the fans out there, if you want to call in 646-716-5564, did Michael Jordan have anything to do with Isaiah Thomas being left off or Scottie Pippen as well?
You know, yeah, this is all a lot. I've heard a lot of banner, especially, you know, at the mark where everybody's talking about the dream team. But I'll tell you, I never heard about any of that ring, you know, back in the day. And granted, I wasn't an adult, you know, but, you know, this is the kind of stuff I never heard back then. And I think it could be all 20 years later, we're all looking back and wondering and starting to put our own spin on it, you know, two decades later. So for me, could he have? I mean, there absolutely could have. Did he? I mean, I doubt those kind of conspiracy theories. I think the team was going on based on more than just, you know, petty little things between the players. I think it was like, okay, let's put together a team that's going to crush everyone else. And I think that's what they were really worried about. But I mean, who knows? I mean, you know, Tarvin, your guess is as good as mine on the conspiracy theories of what Jordan may have done.
Well, I'll tell you this, is the more years that Michael Jordan's been removed from playing basketball, I like him a little less every year. And from what I'm hearing, and it sounds just like him, that he didn't want Isaiah on that team, and the only condition that him and Scottie Pippen would play on that team is if Isaiah Thomas, you know, if Isaiah Thomas said, you know, or he couldn't play. But hold this thought. We're going to go to the phones. You're on Way In Sports. Who is this and where you're from?
Hey, it's Sonny Clark. How are you?
Good, Sonny. How's everything going?
Oh, I'm doing good. Just listening a little bit while I had the opportunity, just sitting here. Just to let you know, guys, sometimes I'm up in the middle of the night, and I was listening to an ESPN over the weekend or something like that, what it is, and they were talking about this very subject. And it has come out somewhere in a book or something that Jordan hated Isaiah Thomas. And it's straight out, and Jordan basically said, if Isaiah Thomas plays on this team, I'm not playing on this team. So what are you going to do? Are you going to have the best player in the world not play on the dream team, or are you going to kick Isaiah Thomas, who was a good player without question? And frankly, I think he deserved it more than Stockton, just personally. And I love John Stockton, but I think Isaiah Thomas was an all-around better player, especially at that time in reality. And never mind the fact that he led his team to the championships as well. But you can't have a dream team without having Michael Jordan on it. That would have just been stupid. So it was either Isaiah or Michael Jordan. Take your pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I heard Scottie Pippen was one that didn't want it. Chris, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask Sonny, what was all the bad blood between Isaiah and Jordan? I mean, what kind of fueled the fire there?
I'll tell you exactly. In those playoffs, they had to meet each other. And those games were some of the hardest played games from both of those two squads. When you look at the Chicago Bulls and you look at the Pistons, the Chicago Bulls were more finesse. The Pistons were more physical. The Bulls weren't used to getting knocked around as much as they did when they played the Pistons. That's just the way it was. They were known as the bad boys of the NBA back in the day. That's one of the reasons why. And there was a couple of shots. And Isaiah Thomas may be a skinny little runt, okay? But Isaiah Thomas was one tough SOB. And he put his body on Jordan every time he got a chance to. And as a matter of fact, it was so much is that the Chicago Bulls players trying to defend Michael Jordan really hated the fact that he was in there doing that and playing that way. But that was just the way it was. When you had Chuck Daly in there, that's the gruff guy, you know, the gruff manager on the side, saying, you got to hit these guys, you got to hit these guys, because they knew they weren't going to beat the Bulls. And the only way they were going to beat the Bulls was to wear them down. And in the NBA, the only way you wear down a team is being physical with them. And that's one of the problems with the whole situation that happened.
Yeah, Sonny, I remember those games with Detroit and Chicago. And do you remember that year where Scottie Pippen had the migraines real bad? He was getting fouled so hard.
Yeah.
I believe that was against the Piston and the Nasty Boys, but I'm sure it stemmed back from that. But do you not play with someone and affect their future too? I mean, that's a big honor for Isaiah Thomas as a dream team. It's not that you're competing against one another. You're with one another. And if I'm Michael Jordan or Scottie Pippen, I want the best team available, so I want Isaiah Thomas to be out there with me, whether I like him or not.
Well, I guess egos. It just let it be known that Michael Jordan had a big ego. Okay, just because he was best in the world. Okay, this guy had an ego that was overinflated more than anybody. He was good, and guess what? He knew it. Now, you didn't hear about him going out there flaunting his stuff out there and all this stuff, but he was still known to have that ego, and that ego, you know, set precedent, really, in the NBA. If you take a look at it, you know, Michael Jordan set precedent on what we're seeing today in basketball. It, you know, so much more so than all the greats back in the world, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's, you know, the Magic Johnson's, although he was great as well. He set precedent on what greatness is in the NBA right now. And when you look at today's players, they're nothing like the players that we saw back in those days, but he is the moniker of what you're supposed to be like when you're an NBA player and if you're going to be the quote-unquote superstar of your team.
Yeah, that's a great point, Trey. What do you think, buddy?
You know, Tarvin, I mean, you know, Michael Jordan is going to be on the team. I mean, yeah, I don't knock. I mean, I'm sorry. If it really did come down to, you know, U.S. Dream Team and they go, okay, well, you know, we get Jordan or we get Isaiah, that's not even a choice. I mean, sorry, Isaiah, but John Stockton is, you're, you know, pretty good. You know, it's not like there wasn't a player who was up to his par. And you can argue about whether Thomas was better than Stockton, but the point is, it's still an argument for me. I don't think it was absolutely clear cut. And so, if there was going to be a feud with the best player, and then, of course, Scottie Pippen, who was phenomenal, guess what? Then you want unit cohesion, just like you do with any group. If your team can't get along, they're not going to win. And we've seen that with other U.S., you know, dream teams in the past who were clearly, you know, more competitive, more talent than the other world teams that still lost games. So, I mean, you got to have a team that wants to play together. And if, you know, two guys don't want to play with one guy, then guess what? The one guy's out.
Hey, Sonny, exactly. Sonny, I have a question for you. You know, the dream teams now, you know, so to speak, dream teams, do you think we'll ever see a team as good as that one?
Heck no. I mean, you had Larry Bird sitting the bench, for gosh sakes. Okay? I mean, when you have Larry Bird and he wasn't even starting, that's how good this team is. I mean, and say what you want about Christian Laettner. At that time when he was coming out of college, he was the best college player. Sorry, he was. He was just one of the best college players at the time, and they needed to have a college player. They wanted that college player. At the time, it was Christian Laettner, definitely the best player at the time. So, you know, it is what it is, I guess you can say.
Yeah, Chris, you have any thoughts on this one?
No, I mean, well, I think we've pretty much hammered home all the points. Yeah, I completely agree with Sonny on the Laettner thing. You know, a lot of times he's used as a scapegoat. You know, people are like, well, why in the world, you know, did they have him on there? Well, the thought was that they always wanted to have that top college player on that. And Sonny's hit it right on the head. I mean, at the time, you know, Christian Laettner was the best basketball player out there, and really is probably one of the best college basketball players of all time when you break down his career. So I have no beef really with the Christian Laettner argument, but I'm kind of with Trey. You know, it's pretty much a slam dunk case here. If you're telling me you got to pick between, you know, Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen for Isaiah Thomas, then I'm taking that trade any day of the week.
Yeah, Sonny, Michael Jordan, though, and I said it just a minute ago, I don't know if you heard me, but the longer he's been out of the NBA, the more I dislike the guy. And I'm telling you, I used to love Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen watching the Bulls play, you know, but every year that goes on, it's just like I just don't like Michael Jordan as much as I used to. Is that the feeling you get, or?
I'm kind of neutral on it. I think that he's such the best – well, he isn't such. He is the best player that plays the game. But the problem is the NBA is a business, okay? And taking a player out of his position, such as a Michael Jordan being a great player, doesn't automatically make you a great owner. And that's all we're hearing about as far as the ownership and what's going on with this team down there. They're horrible. They are a horrible football team. That having been said, when you're dealing with a Michael Jordan who has the ego, and this is where we're seeing the ego, the reason why you're not liking Michael Jordan as much as you used to is because he seemed somewhat, when he played the game, humble. Now, yeah, with him where he's at now in ownership and trying to lead his team into greatness, which will probably never happen, because he is not an owner. He's not a business. He's a businessman, but he's just not very good at it. And so that whole situation there is when you're not a very good businessman, you own a basketball team. There's no question. All you got to do is look at the roster and go, this team has a snowball chance to hell of winning the NBA champion as much as maybe the, you know, what, Seattle Seahawks winning the Super Bowl. You know, it's just, or the Arizona Cardinals winning the Super Bowl, although they gave it a run. All you got to do is look at the roster and realize that this team is not very good. He hasn't put together a good team. And the question is if and when he will step aside and let someone else do it, maybe the team will become a better personnel team to where they can be in contention. But until then, until he steps away, sort of like Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys, as soon as Jerry Jones steps away from the, you know, the everyday-to-day thing, as far as the Dallas Cowboys are concerned, the Dallas Cowboys will be a better basketball team. Same thing with Michael Jordan and his team.
Yeah, I agree. I just think Michael Jordan, though, I mean, I know he's in a bad light with some people, don't get me wrong, but I think you're right about the ego part of him now. He was humble back in the day. It seemed like he was a team player, and I guess it's different when you're a manager. You're owner of a company now, and you're losing. So, you know, it kills Michael Jordan's ego to sit here and be probably classified as the worst team in history, you know, with what he had, and then losing the draft pick. And I still think that's rigged, by the way, Sonny, that NBA lottery draft. I can't stand that, man. You know,
I think there needs to be a different way. Ping pong balls, I mean, that doesn't seem very it doesn't seem very logical, I guess, the way the NBA or the way the NFL does it. Of course, I think that's the way it should be as far as, you know, the NBA. The ping pong balls supposedly add excitement. No, it doesn't. It adds controversy every single year, especially when the one that has the most balls don't win, which is kind of funny if you think about how I said that. But You take that whole situation, and that's one of the reasons why David Stern is under a lot of fire. This guy is supposedly set up to hand the reins over to his successor in about 2 or 3 years. But in about 2 or 3 years, you know, people in the situation of what's going on in the NBA are really getting sick of David Stern just about the way that he is. And you want to talk about a guy that has an ego, all you got to do is listen to that tape recording with Jim Rome and hear the ego in his voice. Now, I don't like Jim Rome. Matter of fact, hate the guy. Don't like him, won't listen to him unless something like this comes up. Take away from that, you know, you got two egos going at each other. Of course that was going to happen sooner or later. I don't care how many years he's been interviewing. So the egos, as far as the head honcho running the whole NBA, that's got to change sooner or later as well.
Well, yeah, what in the world was Stern doing, Chris, with that? You know, if I'm Jim Rome, which I can't stand the guy either way, anyway, I'm gonna knock the guy out almost if he said something like that to me. What in the world would he bring up his wife for? I think he said, well, why are you still beating your wife? Is that his words, Sonny?
Yes, that's what he said, and I tried to do the research. I could not find anywhere that Jim Rome had beaten his wife or anything else like that. So, and I can't even find the rumor, and if someone has it, I would love to see it. He went to an extreme to make a point, and that, you know, there could have been a better way to make his point.
Chris, do you know any truth behind that or any rumor that you've heard?
Yeah, I was like Sonny. I tried to go and find some, I guess, some dirt, and, you know, nothing turned up. But, you know, I think there's been a lot of bad blood between Rome and Stern before this little altercation. And, you know, Rome was just basically trying to make a point from his listening base. You know, I mean, there was a lot of conversation, you know, I guess, in the days leading up to this interview about the NBA lottery being rigged, and so Rome had the right to ask him the question, and I don't think, you know, Rome, he tends to do stuff just to kind of poke and prod at people and just to kind of get their reaction, but I really don't think that was his intent from this question, and Stern took it as, you know, hey, he's trying to he's just throwing a low blow. So I'm going to go back and basically say, hey, you know, are you still beating your wife? Which, you know, definitely a poor choice of words to get his point across. But you have to realize that there was a lot of bad blood between Roman and David Stern before this. So it all kind of perpetuated into this bad bad exchange of words and jabs, I guess, by each participant. So, you know, Stern, he definitely, I think he owes an apology, but, you know, we'll never hear that from him.
No, not with his ego, like Sonny said. I mean, he's not going to apologize to that guy because, like you said, he had something in the past, you know, bad blood between them. I mean, I would have a lot more respect for Stern if he did apologize. But, I mean, you don't bring somebody's wife into some argument with something like that, accusing somebody. It'd be like me saying, Sonny, you still smoking crack? And I don't even know you very well, you know, except from the radio station. So
yeah.
you just don't say stuff like that personal about somebody. It'd be different if he said something about him just alone. But, Trey, what do you think about Stern's comment?
Well, I mean, I think it's all pretty much taken probably worse than it is. I think Stern's point was with that question is there's really – you're leading into the answer by asking the question. So Stern's point was by asking is the lottery fixed, you're instantly assuming that it is and making sort of pointing out, is it a poor choice from Stern? Yeah, I mean, you're the commissioner of the NBA. You should, you know, rise above that kind of stuff. You got to know that someone like Jim Rome is going to ask some crazy questions, and that's why you go on a show. You know, so for me, yeah, I'm not offended by any of it, but I am just like, really, you know, come on. There's another Rome, you know, guest that goes crazy because Jim Rome asked it. But, you know, I don't actually, you know, after I listened back, you know, when I first heard it, my first reaction was, of course, Jim Rome is going to try to, you know, tick someone off. That was my first reaction just because that's what he always does. After I listened to it, I really do kind of agree that, you know, hey, he was asking the question that a lot of people have, you know, what's up with the lottery? You know, it seems like it never goes in the mathematical odd type way.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, so I don't think at this point that Rome was trying to do that. I mean, who knows? But, I mean, either way, I think it is a legitimate question. People do inquire. So, you know, David Stern should have been like, hey, you know, I'm glad you asked that. Here's my chance to say, you know, to all your fans that there's no way this is happening. Let me tell you all the safeguards. But, you know, whatever. He could have really given a good answer, but, you know, he gave, you know, some, you know, really snide little comment and came off like a little kid. And he really should have given the answer that everybody wanted to hear. Why isn't it, you know, give us all the ways that you ensure that there's no way that happens, you know, if there's got to be out there. So that's what he should have done.
It was a punk answer. It was a punk answer if you think about it, because what he did is he went to an extreme to make a point. He came out and said, of course not. You know, that never happened. So basically by him accusing if he's beating his wife, that's something that probably never happened. Like I said, I couldn't find anything. So I think that's what the extreme of the answer was. You know, of course that didn't happen. So when he asked Jim Rome if he beats his wife, of course I don't beat my wife. See, and he went to an extreme, and he just stepped in the doo-doo is what happened, because that story's not going away, because obviously you're still talking about this happened 4 days ago, and we're not the only ones still talking about it. This is still making its way through all the major talks. Heck, even Dan Patrick, which I don't like him very much neither, he was even talking about it. So once it hits a mainstream and you got a guy such as David Stern stepping in the doo-doo, it's going to be, you know, fair play. He went to an extreme to make a point. Obviously, they didn't cheat. So obviously, Jim Rome don't beat his wife. So it wasn't the right thing to say, and he could have definitely had a better example to say. Like you said, he had the opportunity of a lifetime to come up and say, hey, we stand by what we're doing and everything else, and it could have been a good question with a good answer, which no – and let's do this. Let's give Jim Rome a little credit. No one asked the guy this, okay? He goes on ESPN, Fox, Rome, Patrick, all these – none of them had the stones to ask him the question. Rome asked the question. Now, did they not have the Stones to ask the question because they want to continually have David Stern on their show? Or were they just a bunch of wimps that would not ask the question that everybody really wants the answer to?
I think it's the second one. I think they just don't have the Stones to ask the question that everybody wanted to know. And Ron, you know, he's the perfect one. He's real blunt and direct. So I appreciate him asking the question, and I think Stern expected, you know, him to come out and try to attack him, and he took it that way, like Trey said.
Yep.
I think that's a good breakdown of it, you know, just like that. But, Sonny, off of this for a minute, have you watched any of the College World Series?
I haven't. No, I'll be honest. When I listened to your show last week and the week before. I'm learning more about the college games because I usually hang out with the NBA, you know, all the big ones, except obviously when we're doing the IFL. I know about the IFL probably better than most people as far as the IFL, the Indoor Football League, is concerned. Take away from that, I don't follow a lot of college. I tried to get into it. But you're definitely educating at least someone like me to find out how LSU is going to be doing next year and things like that. And I also see tonight that you're going to be talking about the Texas Longhorns. I'll be honest, I live right here in Texas. I don't know much about them. The Oregon Ducks and Southern Cal, just don't know much about them. So I'm anxious to listen and learn what you guys are going to bring to the table tonight.
Yeah, that college football is, you know, throughout the country right now, it's like that's still, you know, even though, you know, in the South, we all think that we're the only ones that love football and think about football. But, you know, out West, I'm seeing a lot of fanatical Pac-12 fans and TCU fans and Texas fans and everywhere. You know, everybody's a fanatic, even up in Michigan. So tonight's going to be fun, Sonny. We have a debate with Oregon and Southern Cal. You know, two experts are coming on to discuss their teams. And, you know, here in the South, a lot of people don't know much about Oregon or Southern Cal because they're too busy, you know, focusing on their own teams and stuff. But there's some great teams out West.
Yep. You
know, just people, you don't take the time to really pay attention to them, or you don't get to see them on TV much because they're on at midnight on Saturdays because
Absolutely.
You're in bed already.
Yep. Well, the only thing I know about the Ducks is they've had a great running game for the last 2 years. I mean, because when you're talking running game and you're talking Pac-12, I think they at one point had the best running game in the Pac-12 at one point, if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong, but I do remember Oregon State or Oregon having the Ducks having just a great running game over there. And Southern Cal, the only thing I know about them is they're on probation, so, but I know they're still a good football team.
Yeah, they are. They're loaded with talent, but the issue with them is going to be the depth coming off the probation. They've lost like 10 scholarships per season, and that's a lot. You know,
you hit somebody with two
scholarships per season, it's going to cripple their program almost. So it's going to be interesting to see how Lane Kiffin brings these guys out. But quickly, how about TCU this year? I know you're a big TCU fan.
I am a TCU fan, and I'm with us doing the play-by-play for the IFL Island Wranglers. I've come in contact with Brian Estridge, who's the radio voice of the TCU Horned Frogs. The one thing that I find very interesting about this team and what he has been saying about TCU is that he's not expecting a lot from this team because they've lost a lot in the last 2 years. Of course, you lose your big guns for the last couple of years. Now it's time for them to reload a little bit, but they expect them to be competitive, but I don't think we can expect them to see up on the top of the list like we normally have, although they're a little bit, you know, lower on the totem pole because of their schedule and things like that. But they're expecting TCU probably not to have the seasons that we've seen in the last, what, 4 seasons. TCU's been up there along with Boise State trying to battle out, trying to get to the national championship game, which will probably never happen. But they're going to be, you know, they're probably going to slide down, not be in the top 10, but they'll be hanging around somewhere around the late teens and somewhere in the 20s. As far as the rankings are concerned this year. At least that's according to Brian Estridge, and I pretty much listen to what he says when it comes to that kind of stuff.
If I'm looking at TCU, guys, you know, changing conferences, going from a conference where you really, and let's face it, TCU's had a great program, but they haven't had to play that week in and week out schedule that's demanding and physical. I wonder if they have the quality depth to compete in the Big 12, because the Big 12 looks loaded this year. And I know TCU can beat anybody on any given day, but can they do it week in and week out? What do you think, Sonny?
Oh, when I look at the Big 12 and what I do know about the Big 12 is they're going to have a hard time winning. They're going up against some top-notch programs in the country. Forget the fact. I mean, they're going to run away with the WAC and those conferences. They would run away with them because they're just not as good. These are football programs, okay? I mean, when you look at Oregon, say what you want about them, but they're a football program. And Washington State, football program. Oregon, they have theirs. But Southern Cal, Arizona State, those are football programs, okay? And even though TCU is good, they never faced on a consistent basis that kind of competition week in, week out. They get one more year of having kind of a slight schedule, if I'm not mistaken. Then they go into the big, go into them and start playing all these, tough, hard-nosed football teams. And I don't know if TCU will be able to keep up with it on a consistent basis. I agree with you.
I hope they do, because I really like watching those guys play, and I have a lot of respect. I was hoping to see, TCU and Auburn play one year, back a couple years ago when they were playing, because, TCU at Patterson, he's done a great job, but
all
I was scared of Morgan
reachable.
A little.
PPS 6180.
Hello?
Looks like somebody went off there. But looking at TCU, though, TCU, they just now had one of their big guys retire out of the NFL, LaDainian Tomlinson. He puts up his shoes, and they got some. If I'm not mistaken, Andy Dalton came out of TCU. If I'm not mistaken, I know it was local. They have some talented guys on that football team.
Yeah, they do. And I think, Sonny, if you want to stay on with us, and you're more than welcome to. We have two guests coming on right now. If you want to stay on, we'd love to have you.
I'm going to just go and listen and learn. Thank you for the time. I'll keep listening, though, okay?
All right.
Thanks,
all right, thanks, man.
Thanks,
have a good one. And I believe I have, let's see, my studio has been acting up a little bit. I believe I have Avery and Colin, and I'm going to bring them on. Let's see. Avery and Colin, are you both there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, that's Avery, or is that Colin?
That's Avery.
Okay, Colin, are you on? Well, I don't have Colin. I thought I had Colin on, but I guess not.
What area are you in right now?
Yeah, hey, Colin.
Hello? Oh, hey, how's it going,
buddy? Oh, good, man. We've been looking forward to having you on and talking a little Pac-12 football, or actually a lot of Pac-12 football here. So
yeah,
how's everything going
on
here, too? Hey, I was going to tell you, we have Chris Ricketts as a co-host with me and Trey Patterson, and they'll be asking questions, too.
All right.
Good. Hey, I've never had one of these before, like a debate, so, it's going to be a professional debate, of course, and we'll talk about Oregon and Southern Cal. What I want to focus on with y'all is, the 2012 upcoming season with these guys and who's going to win the Pac-12 and why. So, Avery, let's start with you, bud.
Hey, first I want to say what's up, Colin. How you doing? And to your co-host, how are you guys doing?
Hey, what's up, Avery?
Oh, man, nothing much. As far as the Pac-12 this year, I mean, the obvious answer would be USC. But, again, we have the tendency to have those hiccup games. Oregon will be coming to the Coliseum this year, which would be great, which helps us a lot. We're not overlooking them for sure. But the sneaky games are your Utahs and your Stanfords and your Washingtons. I worry about those smaller teams more than I do the big teams, because I know USC has traditionally done well in the big games. But those sneaky teams are the ones who's come to bite us in the butt during the season when we're trying to make a run.
Yeah. Colin, how's the Oregon Ducks going to look?
Well, it's kind of hard to say at the moment. I mean, we don't know who the quarterback's going to be, and that's going to change a whole lot of how they play this year. They got Kenyon Barner back, who's been the backup running back and pretty good for the last couple of years. The whole secondary is back. Most of them were freshmen last year except for our safety. And I think we lost three defensive linemen and one linebacker. So the defense should be a little bit better. The offense has a couple questions they need to answer early.
So, Colin, I see you have four offensive starters and six defensive starters returning. Do you think that's enough to overpower a team as talented as USC, especially on the road?
I don't know. The defense isn't a big question mark for me. I can't really say that. Our corners need some serious improvement from last year, as everybody saw in the USC game. The offense is going to be a little bit interesting, though. Depending on the quarterback that starts, there's probably going to be a whole lot more passing than people are used to. We have a couple real highly regarded recruits coming in for this year for the receiving corps. So, yeah, it should look like a whole lot different of a team than it has the last few years.
Avery?
I mean, looking at Oregon, they're still a good team on both sides of the ball. I personally feel that Barner's not as big of a threat as Michael James. And with DeAnthony Thomas, it's just, with him, he's a small guy. He's a very fast guy, a very quick guy. It's just keeping him healthy because, of course, he's going to get more touches this year, and I'm pretty sure, he's going to take some hits from the bigger players out there. So if they can keep DeAnthony Thomas healthy, they should be a very dangerous team. As far as USC, we're returning 19 out of 21 starters from last year.
Wow.
Depth issues are going to be on the defensive line. We have some guys coming back who did quite a bit of playing time last year. 18 out of 21 players coming back on 18 starters. Defensive line is going to be the question for USC. But I believe in the recruiting that we've done. I know we have some great players who are lined up and ready to play. It's just that they haven't been heard of because they haven't had any PT.
Yeah, I look at USC, guys. It was Matt Barkley as that quarterback. And I know Oregon, Colin, their offense is like you can stick someone in. And I saw that several years ago when their quarterback went out and they just put somebody in and they were actually better. I'm wondering, is the quarterback going to be able to produce enough to outscore USC? Because, man, this offense of USC, what I'm looking at is going to be phenomenal, especially a receiver.
Well, I have some questions about who they pick. There's Brian Bennett, who played a little bit last year, and Marcus Mariota, who we've only seen in the spring game and heard about through practices. Mariota seems a whole lot more comfortable passing, and he's okay running. Brian Bennett's kind of a run-first quarterback, which I don't want to go back to because that's kind of how Masoli was, and it seems like that could only take us so far. We saw what Darren Thomas did when he came in his first year, but he also had a better supporting cast than they will this year.
Okay.
But as far as the running back goes, yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, as far as the running backs go, I think Kenyon Barner is going to surprise a lot of people, even as a backup last year, he had almost 1,000 yards, and he's the one that did most of the damage against USC. It wasn't Michael James last year.
Okay, on the schedule-wise for both Oregon and USC, I'm looking at it, and I don't – who's got the toughest schedule, Avery, between Oregon and USC?
Oh, USC without a doubt. And Oregon has a very, very nice schedule. For a national championship run. I know they have two FCS teams that they're playing, not because they scheduled them. I know a couple of teams backed out on them. But even still, Oregon has a very, very nice schedule. USC has Hawaii in the first game. Hawaii is a very dangerous team because they score in bunches. We have Syracuse after that. Then there's Stanford. We're on the road at Stanford. We're on the road against Utah. So it's going to be kind of tough. I know Oregon doesn't play Utah this year, so that'll help them out a little bit.
Yeah, and guys, in the SEC we had the championship game that y'all started a couple years ago, I guess. So how is it going to work if just say, here's a scenario I want both of y'all to discuss with me. Just say USC beats Oregon. Oregon wins all of their games besides that one, and USC wins all of them. And Oregon turns around and beats USC in the championship game. How is that going to affect your conference? Do you think you'll still get in the championship game with a one-loss Big 12 or a one-loss Big SEC team?
Well, a lot of that depends, because if you have another team out there with a similar record with a better schedule, of course they're going to get the nod to go to the BCS game. Oregon would go to the Rose Bowl if they beat USC in the conference championship, and you can almost bet your last dollar that USC would get an at-large bid to another BCS game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I agree with that. I agree with that totally. USC's got too much tradition to be left out with one loss, especially
right.
if I'm able to go to a bowl game last year.
And that's what I was talking to the Michigan State fans last year. Even though Michigan State was better than Michigan, you guys are not going to get invited to the BCS. Michigan went to the BCS game, and Michigan State didn't last year, and that's because it was Michigan. These bowl games have to make money, and the smaller teams, sometimes they just don't bring it in terms of money and revenue and viewership.
Yeah, it's not just about the fans, is it, to show up for the game? Because both Michigan State and Michigan fans would have showed up. It's people in the country that would watch that game, correct?
Correct. Yeah, your gate is going to be filled no matter what, because people are excited to be in a BCS game. So you don't have to worry about your crowd. Your crowd's going to be rocking, but the viewership, you have such a small percentage of the country is actually interested in Michigan State football. That's not to knock Michigan State. I'm just saying there's such a small percentage of people in the country that are interested in Michigan State. Whereas Michigan, you may not be necessarily interested in them, but if they're doing well, you might tune in. You know, a number two ranked Michigan team will get a lot of viewership, because of who they are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Colin?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was kind of paying attention to something else. Can you repeat the question?
I just wanted to know what you thought about, if USC beats Oregon the first game and Oregon ends up winning the rest of their games and beating USC in the Pac-12 championship game, and you have a one-loss Texas team and a one-loss LSU team, who do you think goes to the national championship between those three?
I'd have to say LSU would go first, but Oregon would go ahead of Texas. Texas is going to have beaten Oklahoma, but USC, even with one loss, will still probably be in the top five, top ten. And that'll be fresh in all the voters' minds when it comes to picking the bowl game. USC would definitely still get in that large bid.
That's a good point. I didn't think of it like that.
I mean, call me crazy, but I actually, if we're not going to go to the national title, I would not want to go to the Rose Bowl. I want an at-large BCS game so we can get a different type of matchup. I mean, we've seen USC in the Big Ten matchup so many times. I believe USC has run 24 Rose Bowls against your various Big Ten opponents, but I would like to see it at-large bid and have us matched up against a nice SEC team or somebody like that so we can see that real intersectional matchup, you know?
Personally, this isn't anything against USC, but I'd love to see Oregon end up in the Rose Bowl and USC end up with an at-large bid to play, say, Alabama in the Sugar Bowl.
Right.
That would be a great game.
Exactly. I think that would be awesome.
Hey, Gage, I have a question. Do you mind if we take some calls real quick? I'm sure there are questions for y'all. Do you mind?
No.
All right, hold on. Let's get them in. All right, 503 number. You're on Way in Sports. Who's this and where you from?
Hey, this is LaTroy. I'm calling from Portland.
Hey, LaTroy, what's on your mind tonight, sir?
Well, I was listening to you guys. I think USC, I'm a big SEC fan down here. I'm a big LSU fan. I support Alabama, too, but I don't see Oregon as a threat to the SEC. I see USC. They got the weapons to beat either LSU or Alabama. Point blank. I'll take Robert Woods and Lee any day.
Yeah, they are loaded with SEC talent, especially in that first starting lineup. But Oregon, though, you know the depth they have, four deep at about every position, that has to come into play.
But this is my thing here. Oregon has never beaten an SEC elite team, so they have their chances. So whenever they go up against them, they just find a way to shut down that spread offense.
They've only played two of them, though.
Well, but my thing about it is, I'll say this. If Oregon played Alabama right now, Alabama will run right over. They're too physical. Alabama just way too physical for Oregon. They're too small. They're not used to that kind of punishment.
And that's what they said before the 2010 BCS title game. And Oregon held their own pretty well in that game.
But I think about Oregon have their chances. They can sit up here and cry. All they want to talk about, they're not the people are not treating them fair. They're not playing a very tough schedule, neither. I have to say that.
Play the same schedule USC does.
But that's the only game. I'm talking about a non-conference schedule. We already know they can beat those high school teams. What are they going to do when they go up against a power SEC team? They can't run the ball against them.
What's your name again, caller? What's your name?
LaTroy.
Okay, so you made a lot of great points, and I just want to make a couple of points of my own. When you look at the national title game against Auburn and Oregon, if you want to look at recruits, if you want to look at size, power, strength, Auburn had all the cards in their hands. They pretty much had a much more physical team. But as you saw, Oregon pretty much lined up with those guys and played with them really well. And I've always said, if I could play Oregon, if I had my choice to play in Oregon, I'd rather play them the first game of the year or in a bowl game after a long layoff, because that offense would kind of be out of sync. You've seen Boise knock them off a few years in a row. Ohio State beat them in the Rose Bowl, which I think Oregon should have beat Ohio State. I mean, USC beat Ohio State that year, and Oregon demolished USC. Not to use transitive property, I'm just saying Oregon should have won that game. And then you look at the Auburn game. I would love to play Oregon after a long layoff because their offense just doesn't seem in sync. If you look at them against LSU last year, they turned the ball over so many times that game, it was ridiculous. They just were not in sync. But I think
that defense intimidated Oregon. Michael James didn't do nothing. I'm sorry, he only had one touchdown, but he still didn't do nothing. He's not no Heisman. He wasn't no Heisman candidate.
Well, I mean, look at Michael James against USC. He didn't do anything either. No touchdowns. I think he had like 40 yards at the most. But
I think he had a little bit over 100 yards rushing in that game, if I'm not mistaken.
Against USC,
I could be wrong.
No, he had closer to 50, but Michael James also only played part of the game injured. Kenyon Barner took most of the snaps in that game.
You know, Michael James is injury prone too. He's too small.
He's not injury prone. He dislocated his elbow once.
But I don't know if he's going to make the 49ers. He's like number 5 on the depth chart.
Yeah, but you can't say he's injury prone when he's had a freak accident one time in a 3-year career. You can say he's small, but he's not injury prone.
I tell you one thing, brother. I'm ready for some football. I can't stand basketball, bro. I'm ready for some football. Come on, let's rock and roll.
The reason why when I talk to Southern football fans, I'm talking about fans of the SEC, I always hear like some people have good respect from the USC, and that's because when Pete Carroll was there, we actually came out to the South and played some games. We played Auburn. We played Arkansas.
Demolished Arkansas.
Yeah, we put up 70 points in Arkansas. We went 4-0 in those games. But you got to get out there and play those games. You got to go to Alabama. You got to go to LSU so these fans can have some respect for you. And that's what Oregon and these other teams who are up and coming, you need to do. You need to go out south. But on the same side of the coin, the SEC needs to be willing to come out here. Don't come out here to play Arizona State. Don't come out here and play Washington like you guys have been doing. Come out here and play Stanford. Come out here and play USC. And come out here and play Oregon. And then we can start having these conversations because – traditionally, Pac-10 has always traveled out there. We've always come out there. You look at Arizona State going out there. You look at all these other Washingtons and Arizonas. They always travel south, but we don't get that return trip back.
But my thing about it is LSU hasn't lost to a Pac-12 team since 1989. I would love for them to play USC. Maybe a game in Los Angeles, and we probably put the game in the Superdome.
I mean, you guys should be thanking God that the BCS screwed us in 2003 and you got Oklahoma. Because I would have loved to see USC. I would have loved to see USC and LSU. The core of that 2003 team came back and won it in 2004 and went back to the national title game in 2005. That team, that was just a special core. I would have seen them beating Mr. Jamarcus Russell in LSU.
Hey guys, we're out of time on this subject, but I want to thank y'all all three for getting on, and I want to have this debate again, but I want to schedule some more time. Right, we have a Texas
fan
on the line.
I have fun too, man.
Yeah, I appreciate y'all coming out.
Yeah,
no,
man,
no problem.
Football season.
All right, man. Y'all have a good one. I'll talk to y'all
care.
Soon. Thanks, guys. All right, you're on Way In Sports. Is this Dusty?
This is him, brother. How you doing?
I'm good, sir. How's everything going with you?
It's going good, first and foremost. I'd like to wish Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there.
Exactly. It is Father's Day, man. I almost forgot.
It is. That's why I'm here. I'm the idea guy.
That's exactly right. We had Colin and Avery on. We ran out of time. I want to get them back on so we can go over that in a little detail. I'm sorry to be a little 5 minutes late with you, but how's it looking for the Longhorns this season, man? I know they've had a couple of disappointing seasons, but I know they're recruiting well. And how's it looking this year for them, man?
Well, disappointing may be a little loose. It's been you've heard Texas and get a rope. We felt like that the last couple of years here. But you know, we feel like we're up in the coming. We've got a lot of good talent coming in. Obviously, Texas recruits with the best, no matter what. And we look at our running backs. We've got an incredible stable at running backs. We've got Malcolm Brown, 2011 top running back in the nation. He came in, played 10 games last year, 172 carries, had 742 yards, averaged 4.3 yards a carry. Then we brought in Joe Bergeron. He was coming as a tailback out of North Mesquite. High school here in Texas, and was come in. They expected him to become the H-back type fullback player. He turned out he was just, he was a stud at tailback. He played 10 games as well, had 72 carries for 463 yards, averaged 6.4 yards a carry. I'll take 6.5 yards a carry every play.
I look at your Texas Longhorns, man, and your quarterback, with four touchdowns and eight interceptions. Did he grow up last year, do you think? Did he mature a lot?
That's obviously, you could ask anybody, whether they're a Texas fan, whether they're not even a college football fan. Everybody knows the question on the 40 is the quarterback. And Ash, from what I've been hearing from my people, Ash has shown great leadership. He's taken advantage of the situation. He's working. And you have to look at the Cal game. I know Mac points at that, and I'm a homer, so I look at that too. He went 14 of 23. He had 142 yards. He threw one touchdown. Most importantly, he didn't throw an interception. And he played the entire game. He made good decisions that game. And I think our confidence with Ash has to be there. David was a top prospect coming out, and I think he's going to end up showing people that he's something special. We put our eggs in one basket with Garrett Gilbert. And I think, that really bit us in the butt.
Yeah. How about JUCO transfer Brandon Moore, a defensive tackle? Have you heard anything about him? Is he going to make an impact this year?
Brandon Moore, from what I've heard, is now considered in the two-deep rotation. I was actually hoping to bring up that Donald Hawkins, who they brought in, also a junior college transfer. He is listed as the starter at left tackle right now. I like the fact that Mac has come in and broke his junior college recruiting standard. He would not recruit junior college players in the past. And I like the fact that he's come in. Let's bring players in there that are ready to play. Let's bring guys that are in there that are ready to win national championships. Because at Texas, with our talent on paper, I've said it before, there's no reason why we're not competing year in and year out. But unfortunately, we don't play games on paper.
Exactly. And, the JUCOs, you brought up a good point. I mean, a lot of successful teams, if you look at them, Alabama, LSU, and, the Auburn the last few years, they bring in some JUCO guys that are very important. Cam Newton was one, Nick Fairley for Auburn. And you had, I think it's Terrence Cody for Alabama. I mean, these guys are – big-time contributors, and they're ready to step in immediately. You don't have to groom them, really. They've already matured. They're at that 20, 21-year-old mark, and they're ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like the fact that we just got a 2013 commit from Jeff Swain. He's a 6'5", 236-pound prospect out of Butte Community College there in California, the same place Aaron Rodgers played. And tight end is a desperate need here at Texas. And I love the fact that they're going out there and they're trying to get players that are ready to play. I love the fact that Mac has changed his idea. I've heard people say if Mac doesn't win at least 10 this year that he needs to step down. And I'd like to be the person that goes in there and asks Mac to step down after what he's done at Texas. But, you know, I love the fact. And obviously Manny Diaz, we have the hottest coordinator prospect in college football, in my opinion. I mean, Manny Diaz, he's come in there, and this young man, and I can say young man, he's older than me, but he is absolute stud as far as a coaching prospect comes. And Texas's defense, I'd put our defense up with anybody in the country, hands down. But the fact is, can our offense keep our defense off the field? That's the question.
Yeah. Hey, I have one question, and I don't want to sound like a smart aleck when I ask this, okay? I'm coming sincerely, and guys, y'all can weigh in. Why is it that Mac Brown doesn't hire assistants himself? He goes out and gets everybody else's assistants when they're proved themselves. And I'm not trying to be smart. I'm just asking. I've always wondered that.
Honestly, not trying to even sound arrogant here, is I think that Texas has the dollars to fork out.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. They can go out there and which is what's frustrating as a Texas guy, is why are we not winning a national championship every year? Because talent-wise, money-wise, finances-wise, all that, we should be number one year in and year out, in my opinion, or at least up there competing for it. So I think a lot of it is, in Texas especially, a lot of it's political.
Yeah, that's a good one. Hey, Chris, you have any questions?
Yeah, just one quick question. I know, you know, you've been raving about Texas's defense this year, and one of the things that I'm seeing in a lot of the scouting reports that I'm reading is one of the potential weaknesses of this Texas Longhorn defense is in their linebacking core. So who do you see this year stepping up and becoming the leader in the linebacking core that can make an immediate impact and help them out there?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer would be Jordan Hicks, the kid from Ohio, who has played good talent here the last couple of seasons, but has been injured. But from what I've been hearing, look for Steve Edmond. He'll be a sophomore out of Dangerfield. He had some weight issues last year, but I think Benny Wiley was the greatest hire that Mac Brown has done since he's been at Texas. He's our strength and conditioning coach. And so if you're looking for a name at linebacker, highlight Steve Edmond.
Okay. That's a good one. Trey, you have any questions?
Yeah, here's my thing. I'm looking at your schedule, the University of Texas' football schedule. And do you see this schedule as pretty favorable for Texas? I look at the schedule and I only see really three games that you guys need to really be concerned about because your road schedule is pretty favorable. So what do you think about – I mean, how many wins and losses you guys are going to put up this year? I mean, I think you got the West Virginia game right in front of the Oklahoma game, but at least it's at home. Other than that, you know, in Oklahoma State, you go on the road before that. Those three games are really tough for you guys. But other than that, you kind of add up pretty well with the road and away. What do you think about that?
You know, I mean, we've been questioned for years about Texas because we schedule soft, and people say that, and we've scheduled games like when we scheduled Ole Miss this year. Ole Miss was somewhat successful. We've got Notre Dame and USC coming up as well. So I think that that as far as our schedule goes, I'll agree with you. It's fairly favorable for us. I can see us winning 10 to 2 games. I think anything less than 10 this year would be considered a failure, based on the talent that we have coming back and the level we have coming back and the favorable schedule we have. There's no doubt we have that. We went to UCLA last year and we're able to win that game. You know, UCLA embarrassed us a couple of years ago. So we'll put it together and we'll see what we can do. But as far as commenting on the strength of the schedule. I mean, I really can't do that. I'm not a part of the administration or the coaching staff.
Well, yeah, I guess what I was getting at. Sorry, Carmen. I was just saying that you know, you guys are scheduling soft. I was saying this schedule really lines up for you guys. I mean, this is a good year for you guys to break out and make contend.
Right.
I mean, I always see
people targeted us about scheduling soft, and then we scheduled Ohio State at a home and home, and it showed that in my opinion, it showed the negativity of big name schools playing each other, because it knocked in 05 when we won the national championship, it knocked Ohio State basically out of it from week two when we played, and the same thing the next year. So I'm not necessarily supporting saying that we shouldn't play big name schools, but I'm like a lot of people, in my opinion, that I don't see a lot of benefit in scheduling those big name schools.
Yeah, I have to disagree with both of you in a way. Like, I mean, I agree with you, Dustin, in a way, but I look at their schedule, and it does line up like the home, like Trey said, but it's a tough schedule, man. The Big 12 is going to be something to reckon with this year. You got to play at Oklahoma State, at Ole Miss, and I know they're not very good right now, but West Virginia's new, Oklahoma, Baylor might have a letdown, but then you have at Texas Tech, which you never can overlook them, and then on the road, Kansas State and TCU. So that's a tough schedule, in my opinion.
And I was listening, you know, earlier, and I wanted to comment, like, people were talking about TCU and Patterson. Patterson scares me. TCU scares me. The Frogs develop the best talent from where nobody wants. And in Texas, you know, like most states, we have 1 through 5A, and TCU develops the small school talent out of anybody in the state. And the Frogs, anybody that wants to take the Frogs lightly is obviously not paying attention to anything, because Patterson, and I live in Fort Worth, so I'm right here around it. And believe me, if anybody thinks, I heard some things like the Frogs, I don't think the Frogs are going to come in and dominate the Big 12. But if you think they can't come in and sneak one, then you haven't been paying attention the last couple of years.
I agree, man, totally. And, hey, I want to get you back on this show, and I want to schedule more time with you, man. I appreciate you coming out and joining.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me, man. Like I said, I always talk SEC, and I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to that. So,
I want everybody to know they can call in and talk about any conference they want to, and it helps us to learn a lot about them as well, you know. And I want everybody to feel like they can. I don't care if it's Akron, call in and give us what you want on your team if you want to. So, man, I appreciate
Absolutely.
You, and we look forward to having you back soon, man.
All right, I got to end it. Hook 'em horns.
All right, hook 'em. All right, guys. Hey, we have a couple of callers, guys, in queue we're going to take real quick before we go to the college baseball. And I want to take them real quick. I'm going to start with, I believe it is 469 area code. You're on Way In Sports. Hello? Okay, they don't want to talk. Let's try our 412 number. You're on Way In Sports. Who's this?
This is Randy Pleasant. How's it going tonight, guys?
Hey, good.
Hey,
Randy,
up,
how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. It was nice hearing about Texas. I kind of totally disagree with the schedule analysis. When I pulled it up and I looked at how that three-week stretch, that's a killer. You got to go back, and there's no bye weeks in between. There's no weeks off. You go at Oklahoma State, which is a tough game, and that's a team that blew the doors off of Texas last year. So they're going to have to be up for that. Then you got a team in West Virginia, new to the Big 12. It'll be their second Big 12 game after Baylor. Baylor's not going to be very good. You know West Virginia, their statement game for this is Texas. They're going to be up and ready for that. And Holgorsen knows that conference. He's going to have the high-flying offense. So you got that back-to-back. And then what do you get after those two landmines? You got Oklahoma.
Yep.
That's tough
yep.
for a college team to get up three straight weeks for that.
Yep.
Not to mention, I looked at some of the other teams. You get them spaced out. Like if you had Oklahoma State, then throw in Kansas. Then you got West Virginia and Oklahoma back-to-back. I get that. That's a little bit more manageable. But to have a team go those three, that's tough. That scares me. And especially a team that there's David Ash is the guy that they're tabbing right now, but who's the guy right behind him? Last name McCoy. You have a bad game against Oklahoma State, you know people are going to start clamoring for McCoy to get in there.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on Texas' schedule, man. I think the Big 12 is still very deep conference and tough. And looking at that stretch, I know they're out of conferences is not as strong, but when they scheduled Ole Miss was somewhat decent, and they're on the road at that game, and it's still a road game against an SEC team, so it'll be tough. But I look at that schedule, and, you know, it's loaded schedule, guys.
It is, and I'm not going to knock them at all for that out-of-conference schedule, because I know you guys were talking about, like, oh, well, they need to – some of them should schedule teams. Texas is a named team. I don't think Texas needs to schedule those. Other teams need to try to get Texas on the schedule. Yeah, in a utopian world, we want to see the Texas and Ohio States, and the Texas play one of the big SEC schools. But it's not exactly smart for them to do that, especially whenever let's say replace New Mexico with one of the big teams then. Then in a five-week stretch, you got that team, then that big three that we already talked about. I mean, it's hard.
Yeah, it is. Trey, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, here's what I was getting at with the Texas schedule is a lot of their big games are at home. And, you know, I wasn't saying they're a powder schedule. That's not what my point was. My point is that it lines up well for Texas this year, other than those 3 weeks, which are undoubtedly going to be tough. I'm not trying to say they're not. All I'm saying is, other than those 3 weeks, the rest of the schedule lines up pretty well. They got the other guy, you know, they don't go on the road after a big game. You know, they have most of their rivals at home. You know, it seems to me that they have more home cooking for the games that matter than they are on the road. And that always is a good thing if you're a big school. So that's my point, Carmen. I think that if this is, okay, you know, Texas, this is their year to come out, sort of step out a little bit and say, okay, we're back a little bit. Because, I mean, Texas has been struggling, but I think the schedule this year, with the home and away, you know, with the home, you know, home games and away games, this is their chance to maybe win 10. That's what I'm getting at.
Oh, I completely agree. You go 2-1 in that stretch, I really don't see another loss on the schedule. And you're going to know what that team's made of by the middle of October.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that.
Chris, you got any comment on this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm agreeing with Trey. I think, you know, the majority of the games are at home, so that's going to definitely bode well for Texas. And also, you know, their defense is going to be really good this year, and they're going to rely heavily on that run game. And as far as the Oklahoma State game goes, I don't really know that that's going to be a close game. I mean, Oklahoma State lost a ton. I mean, they lost their quarterback and their best receiver from a year ago, so I don't really see Oklahoma State being quite as potent on offense as they were last year. So I'm not really – yeah, that'll be a tough game because it's in Stillwater and it's a big rival game, but I think Texas should handle them pretty well in that game.
All right, Randy, man, we're going to switch gears, man. I want you to call back when we get more time to talk some college football. We'll bring you on and discuss your team.
Absolutely. It was nice finally getting a call in. I never can coordinate my schedule to get in here.
I appreciate it.
All right, good talking.
Thanks, Clyde. All right, man. One more call. We got another caller in queue. You're on way in. Is this Sonia?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I was trying to catch everybody. It's like all of our Pride members were on tonight. I just wanted to hop in and say hello and to tell them they were doing a great job representing and supporting the show.
Well, they are. These lines have been jumping tonight, man. It's been exploding. It's hard to keep up with it.
I totally can understand. I didn't want to take up too much time, but just wanted to put my little 2 cents in on a couple of topics. Going back to the MJ thing, yes, he has a huge ego. The reason you see all that coming out now is just like with any media person, you know, there's always open secrets that people don't write about, but everybody knows about. So this is one of those. Let's see, jumping over to the USC-Oregon thing, totally agree with Avery when he said that we needed to come and schedule some games more out there on the West Coast. I do agree with that, but they've got to be willing to schedule them with us, period, and also to meet us halfway. But I really enjoyed listening to Avery and Colin and their debate. I can't wait to hear part two of that because they never got to their big game, did they?
Exactly. And, you know, the way the time is, I was talking to Chris. We texted back and forth a minute ago. We want to bring them back in, like, and set aside at least 30 minutes and have them going through more. It was really a trial run. We've never done that before, but I'm excited about seeing part two and hopefully part three.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be great. And my last one before I let you go and head into, excuse me, the World Series and the other topics, on the Texas thing, I loved hearing Dustin call in, and he's one of our diehard Longhorn fans online, so we know that he was definitely going to represent. But the one thing that I would tell Texas fans, and this is something that really kind of, it irks me when I see it at any school, but it really got to me when I was watching, Jason and I were watching Texas and Oklahoma last year, and that is to see fans leaving the game because they're losing. Now, if you got to go to work, your wife's in labor, you know, something like that, totally get it. But if you are a true diehard fan and you support your team, you stay your butt there until that clock reads 00. You stay till the end. And that was one thing that I did not really care for. And I know it wasn't the diehard fans, but it's just those fair weather fans who get those tickets and they just take up, you know, space and they leave. And it's like, wait a minute, you've got true diehard fans who would kill to be in there. And so that's one thing that I was
impressed.
Sonia, you know, the Utah State-Auburn game last year, you know, sitting in there watching that, we had over half the crowd get up and leave, and it really disappointed me, and I'm glad they missed that comeback.
I totally agree. But I just wanted to put that in and just tell you guys you're doing a great job. Hopefully more people will be online and calling in on Wednesday. But just keep up the good work, guys. I'm going to listen to the end.
All right. Thanks, Sonia. You have a good one. I'm going to go to the 412 area code. You're on Way In Sports. Who's this? 412, you're on. Okay. All right, guys. The queue is empty right now. And we want to talk a little College World Series before we go. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right, Trey. Florida State choking against Arizona. What's your thoughts?
Oh man, it hurts me. I don't know if anybody follows me on Twitter. I think my comment was is I feel like the fan in Major League Two who even when after the Indians starts winning is like, they're just gonna blow it in the playoffs. That's the way I feel watching Florida State in the College World Series. Even though we destroyed Stony Brook today, I just feel like we're going to blow it in the next game. So, for me, I mean, Tarvin, it's a huge deal to get to the College World Series. I mean, I'm not taking that away from Mike Martin and his coaching ability, but I want to see them win at least one year. I mean, so, you know, that's for me. I feel like we can never get over that hump. We're always in the College World Series. We're never actually at the last dance.
Yeah, it's hard to go into that last. It's hard to lose your first one and come back and win. But, Chris, let's talk about one thing that I'm impressed with and see if you are. South Carolina, man, are they not great in this time of year or what?
They are absolutely money when it comes to winning games in the College World Series, and that's the reason why I picked them this year to win. You know, until somebody beats them, I'm going to have to stay with them. I mean, you know, Florida, to me, if there was ever a year that they were going to win it, this was the year. I mean, you know, I think Trey even made the comment they could beat the Minnesota Twins. I mean, they beat a very – very good Florida team last night, and I watched pretty much the whole game. And you know, Florida jumped on them early, and the guy a huge triple with the bases loaded for South Carolina. I think about the fifth or the sixth inning, and then after that, it was just all South Carolina. After that, so they're definitely looking like they are the team to beat right now. So you're right, Tarvin. Until somebody beats them, they're definitely my favorite to win.
Yeah, I mean, you just watch them play, and, I mean, they're just so confident. And,
to be the man. You've got to beat the man.
And that's exactly right, man. I picked Florida in this World Series, guys, and I picked it because I was like, well, three in a row, you know, Florida's dangerous this year, but I'm not saying South Carolina's going to win it all, but I don't see anybody that can really play with that intensity and that composure this time of year.
Yeah, it just seems like they never panic, you know, no matter how many runs they're down or, you know, what obstacle they face, they're a team in the total sense of the word. And I hope they keep the run going just to make me look good. But, I mean, Florida's still going to be a tough beat. I mean, they're a very talented bunch, so... You could definitely see these two teams matching up again here in the next couple of days.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Stony Brook, Trey, I thought they could make a little noise, and, man, they got skull-drugged for two straight games, man.
Here's the thing about the College World Series. You never really know. I mean, that's the great thing about it. It's like the college basketball tournament. It's so fun to watch. Just so many great players come out of the College World Series. But, you know, nothing's really over. You know, there's been a lot of teams who come out with one loss and actually won the thing in the last 10 years. It's actually not – you would think it's extremely rare that in a two-loss tournament that a team loses in the first game and then, you know, clearly they never win again. But in the last 10 years, it's happened, I think, four, five, six times, something like that. I don't know the exact number. I read it online earlier today, but it's – So, you know, these teams like Florida State, who has a loss, you know, Florida, who's now in a losing bracket, I think they're still legitimate contenders. And it's because, you know, in a two-loss tournament, I mean, you know, all you have to do is take two out of three, which isn't hard. You know, and I think Florida's going to crush Kent State in the next round. I think, you know, Florida State's going to be able to play it's going to look like they're going to play UCLA, UCLA is going to match up really well against Florida State. So I think Florida State, even though I'm a huge fan, are going to get knocked out by UCLA. Looks like Arizona they're up 4-0 in the fifth. Looks like they're going to, you know, right now hold on. They're going to stay in that winner's bracket. But I think South Carolina's not going to have any problem with Arkansas. So I think you're going to have an Arizona, a South Carolina sort of undefeated. But we'll see if, you know, Florida State, you know, UCLA can, you know, take that one loss and make it into the championship game. And it's definitely possible with those teams.
Yeah, I think South Carolina's got a decent road, Arkansas. I just don't think South Carolina will lose to them. And I don't think Arizona can beat South Carolina right now. I think it could end up being, you know, a Florida State team or UCLA team sneaking back in there to play a South Carolina or Florida. It's going to be interesting, man. Just like you said, it's double elimination. It's not over yet. And you know how it is in sports, guys. We play baseball. You get hot. I mean, nobody can beat you. So you can get in that loser's bracket and catch fire and all of a sudden win three straight, and then you're right back in it, you know.
Exactly, and
yeah,
then
absolutely.
Too, you know, you find out what your team is really made of when your backs are against the wall. You know, when you got that one loss, you know that you're only a loss away from going home. So it's interesting to see how I love the elimination games because you really get to see the true character of these teams at that point.
Yeah, you do. And guys, we're about out of time right now. It looks like OKC is going to lose this game 3. And I thought they would coming into Miami, you know, the first game. But I look for OKC to bounce back in game 4. But we're going to be on Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. We're going to be on Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. And I want to have another college football debate, guys. And I kind of want to bring Avery and Colin back on. I don't feel like we gave them enough time tonight with the scheduling. I think we had a great show, don't get me wrong. But I want to bring them back on and at least give them a little more time to go over this if they're willing to. But I want to thank all the listeners out there tonight and the callers. You made it a great show tonight. I haven't got to see the numbers yet, but I know we've had a lot of callers tonight so far, and it's been great conversation. And I just want everybody to know, you know, the reason we're on the air is because of you. So anything you want to share, please call us, as long as it's serious. You know, be serious and don't be a prank caller, but call in and talk legitimate football with us or anything you want to talk about. And I think Wednesday night we're going to talk about – Trey, are you going to be able to come on Wednesday night?
Yeah, I think so. This week looks like Wednesday's open.
All right, we're going to discuss Florida State Wednesday night just for you.
There we go.
So I want you to bring that little weak ACC conference to us Wednesday night. You're featured, buddy.
Here's a preview for all the listeners. We're going to disappoint you probably this year. So.
Well, Chris, you got any final thoughts before we go, buddy?
Just one, congratulations to Dale Earnhardt Jr. and all his fans. He finally won a race today at Michigan. He ended a four-year winless streak. So I know we very rarely get to talk basketball on here, but that's one of the sports that I love to follow. And he got a big win today at Michigan, so was glad to see that. And, of course, Tony finished second, so I was pretty happy.
All right, Trey?
No, I just, you know, it is Father's Day, Chris. Happy Father's Day to you. I know that, you know, you're a father. I will hopefully be one next month. So for me, you know, I just want to say, you know, happy Father's Day to my dad, who I love a lot. All those great fathers out there who spent the day with their kids, yeah, even though they had work or whatever going on. So, you know, happy Father's Day. Be a great dad. And, you know, thanks for doing that for our nation, because, you know, great fathers make great adults later on in life.
Yeah. Hey, guys, I got a good report from, you remember I told you my cousin had leukemia?
Yeah,
She got diagnosed last weekend, and her count Monday or Tuesday was 7,700 of the cancer cells in her, and it went down to 40. The doctors took blood today and said there's no traces of leukemia in her blood anymore, and that's the doctor said it was a miracle, actually.
Wow.
So all the prayers out there, everybody said, man, we really appreciate it. This kid's an amazing girl, and she showed was strength and joy during this time, and it uplifted a lot of people. So I just want to thank everybody for their prayers and everything. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And happy Father's Day to everybody out there, and guys, I'll see y'all Wednesday night.
All right, buddy.
Take it easy.
All right, take it easy, guys.
Yeah.